Welcome to Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams. Keeping you informed on how to get ready and be prepared. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Folks, welcome to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. Today we're visiting with Dr. Glenn Miller, who's been on our program a number of times, and we're glad to see you again, Doctor.
Thank you so much for being here. Nice to be back.
And we're going to be talking a little bit about gun violence in schools and some of the correlation with psychoactive drugs and all that sort of thing.
I've been looking forward to this show since I was back in Maryland and came up with the idea. We'll get into this. This is an interesting and, I think, exciting topic because what people think is not what they know, and what we know is not what people are thinking, and we need to get that squared away. Prior to that, though, are you radio ready? According to Michael Harris, Chief Emergency Management, having a hand crank radio is essential for residents to have in order to receive critical life safety information during an emergency. Hand crank radios provide AM/FM bands, National Weather Service band, a flashlight component, and the ability to change or charge your cell phone. For further information, visit the Santa Barbara County Office of Emergency Management website at sbcountyoem.org. That's County of SB org also. Or visit their Facebook site at sbcountyoem. From Santa Barbara County Fire, weed control and defensible space. It's that time again. Create and maintain a defensible space of at least 100 feet or greater around each building or structure on your property. Preserve a single specimen or group of specimens of well-spaced but pruned trees and other vegetation on your property, and eliminate the ladder fuels. That's the fuels in which fire can travel. For further information, visit their website, sbcfire.com. And this is way out in the future, but they're wanting to push this hard. Faith-based Community Partnership Forum for Disaster Preparedness, presented by the Institute for Congressional Trauma and Growth, the voluntary organizations active in disaster in Santa Barbara County, and Aware and Prepare. This seminar, May 30th, 13, between 9 and 4, First Presbyterian Church, 21 East Constance in Santa Barbara. For further information, visit sbcvoad@gmail.com, sbcvoad@gmail.com, and they will respond accordingly. Those of you interested in EMS and health care, you've got to get a copy of the March 4th issue special report, Time Magazine, Bitter Pill. This is an incredible article. Why Medical Bills Are Killing Us by Stephen Brill. And I've incorporated a little bit of this in my EMS book that I'm working on right now, Tragedy of the Commons. But in any event, again, that's special report, Time Magazine, available all over. It's the March 4th edition, also available online. But if you're like me, the print's so small you can't read it. So ophthalmologist. Anyway, let's get into today's discussion. When I was back in Maryland, there was a consultant to the United Nations there talking about things. And he got into the issue of the mass shootings in the United States, all 14 of them. Ironically, as he was talking, the Atlanta shooting took place. And he referred to the Connecticut shooting, and he said, I don't know because the autopsy results aren't back, but I suspect the Connecticut shooting as well as the Atlanta shooting is going to be exactly the same results of the previous 14. And he talked about five things that they've discovered: that all of the shooters had mental disturbances that were well documented, that they had all been engaged in one form or another in target shooting, not illegal or anything, just going out and target shooting. They were all extremely aggressive gamers. They were involved in the electronic gaming and the online stuff. They had all been left home alone, basically short of being abandoned, but they were latchkey kids in one form or another. And here's the biggie. This is the one that was most prevalent. They were all under advanced psychotropic drugs in one form or another. They were all heavily medicated, and that was all showing up during the autopsy results. And so, of course, he's looking at this. And then as a result of that, I was sent a list of drugs and shootings, not just in the United States, but from all over the world. This is not a United States problem in and of itself. This is an international problem in some cultures, and it has to do with the over-medicating of our children. And so I said, I've got to get a hold of Dr. Miller. Let's get him on the air, and let's take the noise out of the discussion, and let's get into the root of what are we really dealing with here with mass shootings with kids, whether it be narcissism, over-medication, abandonment, hand-eye coordination, and dealing with problems through gaming. I don't know. So I open that up to you and just blow it open.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me again. You know, I think it's important that we first kind of define what mass murder or mass shootings, but what we're talking about is mass
murder.
Yeah. And that's when four or more individuals are killed at the same location in the same event. Okay, just so that we have a definition.
We should point out, too, that murder is with malice, it's with intent, it's with forethought.
Correct.
This is not
an accident. It's not someone who drives...
Right.
You know, a bus, you know, accidentally the car goes out of control, breaks through. That's manslaughter. This is the intentional infliction of fatal wounds on four more individuals in the same place, at the same, in the same mm-hmm. event.
It's interesting that they choose the number, a number.
Yeah, and I don't know how that number's mm-hmm. chosen, but in the literature, when we look at the research, that's the number that they use to define mass murder. There are so many things that come into play when we look at mass murder. You're absolutely right. A lot of these individuals suffer from significant mental illness, have been diagnosed in the past, and are on potent psychiatric medications.
Well, what it struck me as curious is that he was talking about the side effects of many of these medications is exactly the thing that we're trying to prevent, and that it is not at all surprising that some of these kids were engaging in such violent activity, considering the training that they were getting via gaming mm-hmm. activity, coupled with the side effects of the actual drugs themselves.
Yes, because it is so complex and so many factors play into it, one needs to really try and step back and look at what the common pieces are. Our data is somewhat difficult to really understand because what we don't know is how many of these potential events were thwarted by the use of medications because someone was really getting psychotic or homicidally depressed. And actually, we were able to thwart those. We don't have those numbers to counterbalance the ones that do end up exhibiting this kind of behavior and causing mass murders.
That's interesting.
So
yeah.
We have to kind of take a step back and say, well, our data gives us some insights, but it doesn't really answer all the questions.
Okay? Well, what we're dealing with, I think, is we're dealing with a situation that has kind of unknown ramifications when you start giving drugs to people to combat something that they have in their mind, some sort of disorder, it's difficult to know exactly what to give them. So there's some sort of still some experimentation that goes on there. And some of these drugs, when you give them, they do the right thing. But if you take them away or you change the dosage, then you end up by creating a huge problem.
That's absolutely true. And because, you know, we in psychiatry don't have that MRI, that CAT scan to say, oh, here's the problem, this is what you give, a lot of it comes down to just years and years of experience and working with certain populations and trying to understand and monitor. What happens, I think, all too often, yes, let me step back. Some people have significant side effects to these medications, which actually ramp up the type of behaviors we're trying to treat and prevent. I've seen it in my practice where you have to get patients off of their medication quickly. It's not common. It does happen. They need to be monitored. I think a big part of it is the monitoring falls aside.
You know, I just had a thought here in the book, The Death of Common Sense. The mm-hmm. author talks about at the end, towards the end of how we got into this mess, about the ADA, the American Disability Act, and how much that has crippled the American school system because every Johnny and every Jane is entitled to an education regardless of how much it costs. And I'm thinking, well, we have over-medicated kids here who under ADA have to be in school. They're entitled to their education, even though common sense might say, wait a minute, I don't think Johnny here should be in school. Is this a factor?
It absolutely is a contributing factor. And one of the things hopefully we'll get to later on in the show is when we talk about, well, what do we do? Once we kind of dissect this apart, mm-hmm. the bottom line is, what do we do to try and help prevent this in the future? And what we have to do is really open up lines of communication.
Well, we have to do at the moment is take a break. Visiting today with Dr. Glenn Miller, talking about over-medicated children in our school system and the apparent results of that. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan on the board on Community Alert, sponsored by the California Fire Safe Council. Not if, but when, positive preparation for disaster. On your Santa Barbara News Press Radio, KZSB, AM 1290.
Hey folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and today we're visiting with Dr. Glenn Miller, one of our favorite visitors on the program here.
Oh, I'm sure you say that to all your visitors.
No, we don't.
Oh, we don't have that many repeats.
We have some great guests, though. Yeah.
And we're talking about gun violence and some of the correlations with mental health and how that all comes about, Mike.
Well, let's get down to what are we really talking about here. There's millions of guns in this country, and not everybody's getting shot. And realistically, it's a miracle, a wonderment, if you will, that more people don't get shot. I'm sure people in Chicago and St. Louis would argue with me. But collectively, statistically, it's not that. And we have millions of people that are over-medicated in this country. Take a pill for this, take a pill for that, and mm-hmm. you're good to go. And so it would be, when you take those two factors that there's so much of it, you would think there might be more of it, and there isn't. So we should be kind of grateful there's only been 14 shootings. The question then becomes, what is it that we're looking at? What is unique about these individuals that have caused them to go over and above what other folks are getting up to the line of?
Right. Well, and there's a lot of research that's being done, but again, there's not a large base number of events to really study. You know, as everyone knows, your data becomes more relevant the more data you have. You can interpret it more. You know, we don't have, as you pointed, thank goodness, that many incidents relative to the population, the number of guns, but also remember that, you know, guns are not the only way that mass murders take place. One of the largest, if not still the largest, mass murders that ever occurred happened, I think it was in the late 50s, when a disgruntled custodian literally blew up the school with propane tanks, killing all the teachers and students, or most of them, in the building. So it's not just about guns. But what we are noting also is that mass murder, by the definition we gave earlier of four or more, oftentimes has a different ideology, a different kind of motive or cultural motive, depending on the setting, too. When we look at something like Sandy Hook, which is a somewhat rural, suburban kind of thing, versus urban multiple killing violence, a lot of the research is beginning to show that the urban type of violence is actually associated more with a much greater inner city tolerance of violence. There's a lot more gang activity, gang violence, and there's almost this acceptance that it's kind of how the inner city plays out. Whereas in urban and rural types of things, it's much more characterized by individuals that have become socially isolated. Okay? And so, again, just to kind of whittle apart some of the data, we have very different types of activities. You know, we hear about in Detroit, LA, Chicago, you know, six people killed in an apartment. Well, you know, there's part of us that go, oh my goodness, that's awful, gang violence.
We know what's ironic is that you don't have to go that far to find mass shootings. Goleta is still the home of one of the largest workplace violence shootings in the United States at the post office. Mm-hmm. Not only that, it involved a woman, which is very unusual for a woman to get involved in mass shooting. It's even more unusual for women to be involved in utilizing firearms.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to get back to the medical aspect of this thing and the idea of from my understanding, and I hope you'll correct me and you'll give me some education here, that we are just on the frontier of understanding the way the brain and the mind works, you know, and the brain being different from the mind, but obviously they're connected. But we're really on the frontier. We don't really understand the way that much of the brain works and how it governs the body's system of understanding its environment, you know. And yet we have discovered these drugs that change some things about the way the brain works in order to make it somewhat better for some individuals to survive. But it seems to me that we've got this situation going on now where we are just kind of putting these drugs into people that have problems and hoping that we will find a combination or something that will actually address their problem and adjusting them in some ways and finding out that these drugs have these really terrible, deleterious effects often on certain types of individuals. So I'd like
to... Yes, and Ted, you're right on all those points. We are just beginning now to get a handle or a basic understanding of how the brain, the mind functions. You know, we spent the rest of the body, we have a pretty good handle on because we can access it and study it. You know, we can open up chests and look, view hearts, and we can work with kidneys and other things. But, you know, our society, rightfully so, is hesitant to have us cut open a quarter inch piece of mat of bone called our skull and start playing games with people's heads, so to speak. So we are learning as we go. I think a big part of the problem with the over-medication is not just the over-medication of psychiatric medications, it's the over-medication of our population in general. We hear about too many antibiotics being prescribed and how superbugs are being created. Well, it's different, but in some ways it's the same. We're finding ourselves that we're creating bigger problems by the over-prescribing and administration of medications.
Well, I was just reading something really interesting, as an aside real quick here, that the fish in the ocean are changing their behavior because of the amount of drugs that are going into the ocean that survive passing through the body, and that they're witnessing that there is a huge amount of material that comes through our body because we do medicate so much that just passes through our body and then goes into the water and gets into the ocean. And now we're seeing that it's affecting the fish and probably other wildlife as well. You know, I mean, it's like huge ramifications.
Well, and medication is obviously not the panacea. It's not the total answer. And what I find, and I find this in my own practice at times also, is that people come into the doctors, whether it's be the psychiatrist, internist, but let's speak psychiatry. I have a teenage son. I have a teenage daughter that's really struggling. I'm concerned about them. They aren't satisfied if they're not walking out with a medication in their hand. Okay. The key is, and I think where a lot of times we've let these kids down or these young people that are involved in these type of events we're discussing, is that the medication gets prescribed and then the monitoring drops. It's not followed up. It is rare for me to be prescribing medications to a teenager or a young adult and not have them involved in some sort of counseling on a regular, consistent basis. It's truly rare.
Okay. Well, let's look at what some of these drugs are. Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, I don't know how to pronounce this,
Anafrenil,
Lovox, Zoloft, that's the Columbine shooting, 15 dead, 24 autopsy results, Lovox and Lovoft. And it goes on from
there. And all of those, except for the Anafrenil, are all the same group of medication, the same class of antidepressant medications, have similar chemical structures, but we have, again, there are definitely side effects to the medications. Medication itself is not the answer. Oftentimes, not only some doctors, but many parents think that we administer the medication and we're done. It's all going to be okay.
Right.
Just like, you know, my kid had the headache, I gave him his Tylenol and it's going to be better. The reality is that it needs to be looked at and up close. But to say that all of the, and these are antidepressant medications.
I'm familiar with every single one of those. I've seen them in my medicine cabinets from past life.
Right. And what happens is that it's kind of like saying, Mike and Ted, it's kind of like saying, well, you know, it's amazing. You know, more people die in hospitals than anywhere else. Well, yes, they do, because that's where they go. People that aren't having depression, that aren't having significant challenging issues mentally, are not going to be going out and committing mass shootings. So to unwind it and look back and say, well, hospitals are someplace you should never go because people die there, is not reasonable.
Well, let me ask you this, because All these medications I mentioned, I've seen, because I've had former wives that have been on this. I've had kids that have been on all of these. I'm familiar with all of them. And I'm thinking, you know, there's nothing about any of these kids and my ex-wife that had any issues that were any different than what anybody else goes through. And yet they're coming home with a bag full of pharmaceuticals, and most of the time they don't even finish taking the regimen, which in and of itself becomes a problem. And I'm thinking, are we over-medicating everybody with a problem? I mean, how did we deal with problems before the pharmaceutical industry said, here's your solution? How did we do that?
Segment, perhaps.
Oh, you want to save that the next segment?
Okay.
I'm being flagged
I'm
off
being
the
told
field
that we have
here.
To go.
The yellow flag has been flown by the ever-diligent Richard Dugan on Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. That's how they dealt with it. They just didn't do it. On KZSB AM 1290.
Hey folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. Today we're visiting with Dr. Glenn Miller, and we're talking about the situation that has come up recently with the gun violence and medication, talking about medication in society and lots of different levels. And so,
well, what we're talking about, I think, is convenience. Convenience for the medical community, convenience for the parents, convenience for the school. Get these kids medicated, get them quiet, put them in the back of the room.
I don't think so.
You don't think
I'm going to take the other view. I think that we are being inundated with information that's telling us that we need to be pain-free, we need to administer these things to ourselves and to our children in order to accomplish something to make ourselves more comfortable or more easy to get along with or better off at work or whatever. I think we're being sold something by the pharmaceutical companies or by some other entity that tells us that why would we not... Why are we taking so many drugs? I think that's a question. The whole society, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's marketing. We're being marketed this stuff.
We have been acculturated, I believe, in this country in particular, probably Western countries in general, that we should go through life pain-free, happy, and relatively carefree all the time. Well, when I have people coming into my office and they go, well, you know, I'm just not happy a lot of the time. And I do have this very frank talk, is that most people are not happy all the time. You know, it's about pursuing happiness that is life's journey. You know, or even our Constitution doesn't say that we are entitled to happiness. No, we're entitled to the pursuit of happiness. I don't wake up every day with this, like, dopamine high. Like, I am so happy.
It's such a subjective thing, too. What the hell is happy?
Right. But what happens, I think, over time, we become acculturated where the expectation is that we're to be happy. We're to be pain-free. So take this aspirin. Take this anti-inflammatory. Take your leave. Get your medicine to make you happy. And we've stopped really working hard to do that. You know, it used to be when you said, what did we used to do? Well, we used to exercise more. We used to train more. We would do natural kind of cures with salt and stuff. We'd heat it up. We would take baths. We'd for physical pain. We would work hard at happiness. Okay. And I think that what we've given up is understanding that there are other more important things than happy. Meaning for your life.
Contentment.
Contentment. What's your purpose? And happy may not be a part of it. Some of the most giving people in our recent history, when you think of Mother Teresa, these were not people whose lives, if you would, were happy, but they had reached a sense of peace and contentment. And so you're right. I think a lot has to do with advertising. A lot has to do with the media. I mean, even the television shows. You know, people are happy and careful. It's not real life. And then when you have your real life television, it's kind of fringy at best.
Well, I something keeps coming to mind for me is several years ago. I don't watch television any longer because I just can't take the ads and all of the stuff that goes along with it. I enjoy the shows when I catch them in another way rather than watching them as they happen on. But there was an advertisement about pain killers, and they were and this woman was there, and she was taking a painkiller that was supposed to last instead of 4 hours, it was going to last 12 hours, and she was going, well, is it going to be okay? I mean, what happens if the pain comes back in 10 hours? And I've got this, is it going to be okay? And it's like, folks, right. I mean, it's not going to be okay. You know, I mean, it's, you know, one of the things about pain is it's telling us something we need to know about our bodies. And if we suppress all the pain, we're not getting the message. We're not learning.
Right. Pain,
you know,
pain is a symptom of something that needs to be attended to.
Right. And it does need to be attended to by a painkiller.
Correct.
It needs to be attended to by some other kind of medical procedure or some change in lifestyle or something.
That's
like
exactly
that.
Right. But talking about the medication usage and how it relates to the kind of events we've seen, like at Sandy Hook and Columbine, mm-hmm. et cetera. Yes, as you've pointed out, Mike, that a large number of the individuals have been on these antidepressants. Does that mean that the antidepressant medication was a causative factor? It's really hard to pull that out because these people obviously needed some type of intervention. It was also obviously inadequate.
Well, I would suggest it's the lack of the counseling and the follow-through and the supervision. Because obviously millions and millions of people are taking these drugs, and they're not going out and doing wild and crazy things, and they're living normal lives.
Right. But
I think your point is, so the point you made earlier, and I think it's a great point, is that without these drugs, how much more of this kind of behavior would be witnessing? And we don't know yet.
Everybody just
focuses on the bad part of it and the fact that these people are taking drugs. But we could be having a tremendous more of these incidents without the drugs. So what we need to have is the research to tell us what the heck's going on.
Exactly right. And what we do know, some of the things we know, is that there are some common psychosocial factors in a lot of these people. Not just the United States, but the events that happened in Europe as well. And those are things like depression. Many of them are actively suicidal and either end up taking their own lives or end up being killed and expect to be. Oftentimes, there's obviously some real problems with their self-esteem. Oftentimes, they have paranoia or persecutory type of delusions. So these are some of the common factors. What do we do to try and identify those people? There's a lot of people walking around out there that have depression. But, you know, an infinitesimal percentage of them would ever actually commit crimes like this. There's a lot of people out there that are narcissists. Again, an infinitesimal amount of them percentage would ever do these kind of crimes. So just to identify the factors doesn't necessarily help us prevent it, because there's so many people with different combination of these factors. What the discussion is now, at least in the psychiatric literature, is coming up with ways to improve communication amongst the different individuals who are interacting with these kids and young adults. Okay? We don't have the resources. We wish we did, but we don't have in this country the mental health resources to help actually really assess for violence. You know, effective psychiatric assessment. Individuals that have been identified as showing some of the risky behavior, okay? Because the numbers are just too great. You know, what? Just about every elementary school, you can identify one kid who's got some problems that people, or junior high. And high school, probably more than one or two. Okay, but what we can do is we can get high school counselors, college counselors, parents, teachers, clergy, finding a way to communicate more openly. Okay? We are so now constrained by some laws and some just ethic rules to not be able to discuss these concerns that the cracks get bigger and bigger that these kids can fall through. And we look back and go, well, oh yeah, this person saw a sign. Oh, and that person over there saw the sign, but we never hooked them together.
But that's where the fear of litigation takes over and common sense goes away.
Yes.
These schools primarily, because the schools are the ones that have these people for the extended periods of time that have a point of reference to see if little
the
Johnny...
Teachers,
but even as a psychiatrist, there's something called the Tarasoff rule.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only allowed to break confidentiality on behalf of my patient if I have an identifiable imminent risk. If I just hear, I'm sick and tired of people and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to kill anyone who comes my way. Who do you warn?
It's too vague.
It's too vague. But if I heard, well, you know what? Next chance I get, I'm taking out my neighbor and his wife and the kids.
Let me give you an example that happened to us on the pass. It's been 25 years ago now. But we had a family that lived on the pass. They had a son who was incredibly unhappy and dissatisfied and low self-esteem and had a lot of problems. And he threatened them, the whole family. He thought that they hated him, and he would threaten them, especially around the holidays. It got really bad. They contacted the mental health. They contacted the sheriff's department. They contacted the police department. They said, this boy is going to do us harm. And every single agency that they got a hold of told them, we can do nothing until he does something. And that's where, and their hands were tied. And he ended up killing every single one of the members of his family.
Mm-hmm.
And shot them all, beat them to death, and that was that. And they knew it was coming, and they couldn't do anything about it.
Let's get into our next break here, and when we come back, let's give folks some hard things to look for. What are the triggers and the things that you definitely know something's not right? It's visiting today with Dr. Glenn Miller on Community Alert with Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan on our slide pods on KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and live on the Internet at newspress.com. We'll be right back.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. Today we're visiting with Dr. Glenn Miller. We've got a lively discussion going on here about...
Once again, the show between the shows is a little more colorful, that's for sure. Let's get into parents, teachers, professionals. What are we looking for in a group environment, whether it be school, sporting events, you know, wherever there's large groups of people? What are the flags that you see from your world that point to this one's in the red zone? This is something we got to watch out for.
Well, there are several key factors or indicators that I would want to be looking for and identifying. And those aren't going to be so much more in the casual group setting as they are going to be in the home and school setting, where adults have the opportunity to really spend time and get to know one of these young people. Okay. And whether it's, you know, junior high, high school, college kind of thing, where there's people interacting with them on a regular and consistent basis. One of the key factors to look at is depression. Is there obvious signs of depression? And a rather sudden, if you would, change in their school performance. You know, he was getting all A's and B's, you know, up until this last semester, and now it's C's and D's. Okay, so that's one thing. Drug use, drug and alcohol use, another thing to look for, because they oftentimes are underlying this type of potential violence. The other is actual suicidality. Is not just the depression, and, you know, has their sleep patterns changed, has their appetite changed, has their school work performance changed, but are they talking about not wanting to live anymore? Because what we do know is that, we mentioned earlier, these mass killings, the people that affect these, all are pretty much expecting or wanting to die. Okay? Another one is, are they victims of bullying? Are they on that fringe, that kind of outcast or that outlier group, whether it be in their social settings around, you know, the neighborhood or in the school setting? Because all of these factors tend to play a role. As far as video gaming, we should touch on this just briefly. You know, there's a lot of discussion about how video games impact our children and all that. You know, yes, it does. It can't help but, if you would, marginalize somewhat the whole concept of killing. because they're killing in a virtual world.
Mm-hmm. It used to be comic books when I was growing up.
Right. But you couldn't execute a comic book.
There was no interaction.
And not only that, but we knew comic books were fanciful. Superman didn't exist. We wished he did, but he didn't. Okay? And, you know, so, but now, especially, I don't know if you've recently seen the graphics. I mean, yeah. It looks like you are on the ground in some urban warfare setting, and you are executing individuals.
I love it.
Okay, well, but the problem is, I was mentioning, you know, before the show, I'm not so certain that the biggest issue I have with it is the marginalization of death and killing and that whole kind of thing. Well, it's not real. But as it is, that it really feeds a sense of narcissism, a sense of self-importance that is already tenuous in the adolescent, pre-adolescent,
mm-hmm.
okay? Because now they are in control not of, you know, your kid brother's basketball or you're going to steal his bike from him, but you are in control of an M16 going through an urban setting and you are right shoulder to shoulder with the Delta Force.
And you're saving the world.
And you're saving the world. And how does that feed these developing minds' narcissism? Their sense of importance. And now they show up in the real world at school and they either get bullied or they get teased. And that fall, if you would, from so high down so low really triggers a lot of, you know, we call ego injury. And it's that kind of ego injury that we see being really at the root of a lot of these
mass
murders.
That brings up an interesting question. If you're sitting there, you're thinking you're Joe Delta Force, and then you go and you decide, well, I want to be Delta Force, so you sign on with the Army, or you're going to go with the Navy SEALs, and you get into the Navy or something, and finally you figure out that you're going to be a cook or a supply
and you wash
clerk
out, yeah.
or mm-hmm. whatever, because an overwhelming majority of people that want to do this don't even get past the psychiatric phase, much less
right.
the physical and all of that. Is what do these people do? And when the letdown comes, they want to be a policeman, they want to be a fireman, they want to be a physician or a lawyer, whatever the thing is, and then suddenly they realize you can't do that. It's not going to happen. Does that trigger this, or is it?
Well,
how do they manage it?
It is an insult to their ego. It's an injury. Obviously, the vast majority of them deal with it somewhat effectively, because again, the number of mass murders and violent crimes really in the scope of things is pretty low. Okay, but we aren't yet able to identify which of those young adults or late teenagers are the ones that aren't going to deal with it well. We know that it has to do somewhat with family / social support networks. There's also the whole copycat thing, as mm-hmm. we talked about. You know, we can't just, you know, just skip over the whole impact the media has on this. The whole, you know, the fact that some, you know, teenager, young adult who feels like the world's done him wrong wants to die and figures out that, well, I can die going out with a bang. I can die with my 15 minutes of the spotlight exactly on me. So I'm not just going to take myself out. I'm going to take my whole class at Virginia, Virginia, was it West Virginia, you know.
Right. Tech.
Virginia Tech, yeah. So.
So is this we're getting into the world of narcissism and borderline personality disorders, which we seem to visit this personality trait a lot in a lot of our conversations, and it seems to be reoccurring. Are these real narcissists, or are these people that have artificially been created? I mean, is there a difference between that, or is it all the same?
A lot of it's been created because of what they have exposure to. You have to remember, our society now doesn't allow there's a trend where we don't let kids lose at soccer games when they're 8 or 9. Okay?
Because their self-esteem.
Exactly. And so there's no real effective development like there used to be in getting that sense that sometimes I win, sometimes I lose. Sometimes I lose really bad, but sometimes I win really well. Okay, and so all there is neutral and win. There's neutral and win. And then when you get to that age where reality sets in, you're not 8 or 9, you're 18 or 19, and sometimes you just lose, the tools aren't there.
Well, you see that, I think, with kids. that cannot get jobs. They have a degree. They did. They played the rules. They stayed out of trouble. They didn't get hooked on drugs and alcohol. They didn't get somebody pregnant. They didn't get married too young. They did all the things that you and I and Ted would have counseled somebody to do. They got their four-year parchment in their hand, and they can't get a job. And all of a sudden, that calls into question the validity of all our counsel. It calls into the validity the question of their education to begin with. And suddenly, the real world's looking at them because the real world doesn't care. It never
right.
has, and it never,
never
will.
Exactly
and
right.
But they've been told that it does care. Where's my trophy? Where's my plaque? Where's my job? Where's my Mercedes? Where's my two-story house? Where's my dog, the cat?
If I play by the rules, I'm entitled to that stuff at the
and
end.
And there's some merit to that thinking in a way. Mm-hmm. Because we've reinforced it over and over and over again. And we wonder then why people get depressed. We wonder why we have people. But what fascinates me is I can understand somebody that's 26 that gets mad. Who's got $100,000 in student loans. He's been through dental school or something. I mean, you're talking about that. And he can't get a job as a dentist, and he's over here at some little warehouse or something driving a forklift or whatever. I can understand that guy getting upset. I can understand all that. I don't condone it, but I understand it. But a 12- or 13-year-old kid who has already figured out in his mind that he's going nowhere, mm-hmm. he's already reached the top of his thing. The best that he can do is make the 6 o'clock news on CNN and Fox and whatever. Where are we accelerating this process of anger and depression? How is it that's being so accelerated?
Well, I think in part because we've become a narcissistic culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the me first.
Well, we're talking about me first. That's Richard Dugan. We got less than 30 seconds for me to get out of here. Anyway, Dr. Glenn Miller with us today on Community Alert, sponsored by the California Fire Safe Council, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. Ted and I and the good doctor will be back in just a minute. You're listening to KZSB AM 1290.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. This is our last segment. Mike and myself and Dr. Glenn Miller. Hope you've been listening to the show because it's been a great show. And
well, this is why this needs to be a three-hour program. It's also why you need to have your own show. I say that every time you come in here. This, why people do what they do? Why does cultures do what they do? If we need to understand this, because we're taking actions and we're pontificating on things we don't really understand.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about narcissism and we talk about borderline personality disorder and we talk about depression, those are the core that we need to look at. And then the tools and everything that goes around this just becomes distractions. We need to get back to basics.
Well, and that's a really good point you make, Mike, is that a lot of the stuff is just distraction. Oh, gun control needs, that's a distraction. Oh, you know, severe mental illness, yeah, that's part of it, but that's not the answer either. And so what happens is the media, the politicians jump on, well, you know, mental illness and gun control. Well, if we focus on that, we are really losing track of the factors that we know to be at play, which are neither of those.
Okay. Yeah. And the mental health, I mean, as a former police officer, I know that the one that was going to hurt me or kill me was the mental health issues. Mm-hmm. Everybody else, the ex-cons, the druggies, the PCPers, I mean, all of that stuff you could manage because they fall within parameters and that they do
and
acceptable
there's even some
things.
Predictable, yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
But the mental health guy, right. he'll kill you. And they are all over our community. And we need to start thinking about I don't mean
there's
locally.
A couple of them in this room right now.
I'm not going to ask you which two of the four.
We're all laughing, so it's like, you know.
It's not the only guy.
Well, we're just obsessive compulsives. But, no, I'm talking about dangerous people.
Yeah.
But they're not waving this big flag. They're not waving a T-shirt on there that says, I'm dangerous. They are quiet. They are passive. They're
because
meek.
Because the ones that are waving the dangers, the ones that, you know, kind of walking past you on the street and you kind of get the hair back up on the back of your neck going, oh, I don't know. Those are the ones, aren't the ones that get us into trouble.
Nope.
It's the ones that have kind of drifted into the background, drifted that just get passed over.
Invisible.
That they become invisible until their one moment, quote unquote, of inglory, where they decide, I can have that spotlight.
What's another way to validate? These people are looking to be validated because they're up to that point in their life. They've been validated either internally through their games or sports or whatever. How can there's another methodology that we as a society can start validating the worth of people so they don't just feel like they're just another blob going through the system, getting up, going to work, going home, going to bed? How do we do that?
Well, the thing is to really validate an individual. Well, it really comes early on as they're growing up. Okay? And that has to be on a one-on-one basis. Okay? And part of it, and you know, it's my soapbox about our education system, is that you can't validate a young person's soul when you've got 34 kindergarten kids running around with one teacher.
Yeah.
When you have, you know, 32 second graders, how do you have the time to really validate each individual? And group validation, like, oh, the entire class won, you know, or everyone gets an A, that doesn't really cut it for them.
And with that, we're done. I'm sorry. Okay. We're looking forward to coming back. And yeah, it does go fast. Dr. Glenn Miller talking today about our mental health system and how it's relating into mass murders and killings and shootings and the things that have been going on in our country, if not throughout the world. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, and Richard Dugan, and a special hello to our friends on the Internet listening to us today. Community Alert, sponsored by the California Fire Safe Council on KZSB AM 1290. The news is next. See you next week.
This has been Community Alert, not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams. Community Alert is produced by the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department, and sponsored by the California Fire Safe Council. Technical support for Community Alert provided by Richard Dugan and Jim Williams. Community Alert, not if, but when. On KZSB AM 1290, your news press radio station.